Welcome to the second hour of The Heart of the Matter with the Americhicks. Molly Vogt and Kim Munson here. We are talking about important issues that should be on your radar today. And as usual, talking about things as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, because we're all in this together. We're all Americans, and we are affected by the things that bureaucrats and politicians pass that affect our lives. So another thing that they're coming after right now that it may not be as obvious to everybody is they're coming after private property. They're coming after your right to choose where you live, what neighborhood you live in, what your house looks like, what color you paint it. They're coming after different decisions that are normally made by local voters and their elected representatives. Federal government is coming out with something new that could change how you run your schools, where you live in, and whether you drive to work on roads or if you are on public transportation by force. What your city's going to spend its money on, and so much more. It's under the name
Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing. And we have a good friend of ours on the line, Smith Young. Smith, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Smith, you have done, and you are a citizen that has done an enormous amount of work regarding this subject. And so if we may, we'd like to start at the beginning. And so what is Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing, and when did it begin?
I think a good way to introduce it is the way my wife and I frequently introduce it when we just go visit HOAs. And we're going to a non-political group, and they're wondering why we're here talking about something. And we usually start out by saying, did you know that HUD has targeted over 1,250 communities? And we're from Douglas County. And so people, you know, that is normally the way we introduce it, is to essentially, for many people to say, did you know that your community is targeted? And then it goes on as to what AFFH really is and how it came about. So, Kim, I know you've been doing a lot of this, so I don't want to, you know, I want to start at the beginning, but in kind of building up from it, let me bounce the question back to you is like, what do you think your audience would first like to hear the most about?
Well, you know, Smith, it's something that it's kind of sneaking in. It's like a camel's nose under the tent, and it's coming through different amendments that city councils are just basically rubber stamping regarding community development block grants, which that's what happened in my community. Is back in June, there was an amendment that came through HUD, again, regarding the community development block grants, under the guise that this money comes from the federal government to help your community. If you don't take the money, then the money won't be there to help your community. But what is so interesting, and I think that you and your wife really unpack this, is that in these grants, 20% can be taken for administration of these programs. And so I took a look at it. In Douglas County, I think that it's about $800,000 that will go to the different communities throughout Douglas County. But when you back that out, about 20% off the top for each entity that it goes through. So that would be for the entities at Douglas County. And then, of course, you know, coming from the federal agencies, I think there's at least probably three or four layers there. It works out. You have to take well over $1.5 million from hardworking taxpayers in order to get that $800,000 to, you know, people that supposedly it's supposed to help. So that amendment was in kind of in a big packet that we had in June. And I voted against it because I think affordable housing is inherently unfair. I don't think that it stands the muster to the vision of the Declaration that all of us are created equal and there should be no partiality. And with affordable housing, you can have two people that have the same apartment, but because of their income may pay a different amount. And I found that wrong. So I voted against it because of that. But buried in there was this AFFH language, and you really unpacked this and had an understanding of that. So I think it would be good if you explained to everybody what this is exactly and how it is going to affect each, you know, our communities.
And where it started, like where did it start? Is it a part of HUD? Is it an add-on? Did it come from Congress? Did it come from the president? You know, where did AFFH start? And what is it? Like, start at the beginning.
I think probably what I should say up front, I'm going to do what Ted Cruz does all the time. He says, go to www, you know what the rest of it is. I'm going to say, go to www.affh.net. And I'll probably repeat that a couple of times.
Excellent.
Because there's information on their beginning. And early last summer, when HUD, shortly after Supreme Court ruling, when HUD decided to make it official and posted the rule, which is 377 pages, in the Federal Register, and I believe that was July 16th. So,
let me just make a point that was put in the Register in July, but this amendment was presented to our city council in June. So they were running ahead of this, which I find really interesting.
That's when it became. HUD was rather trepid with it because they didn't really have confidence that the Supreme Court would rule in their favor on what's referred to as disparate impact. And that was basically a case that was in Texas. And that's another topic, but I want to pick up on what you started out with the camel under the tent, the camel nose under the tent. And what should be understood that HUD's been in business for a long time and they've been giving out grants, you know, forever. And prior to the Obama administration, HUD was still giving out grants, but it was quite different. It wasn't so much of a blackmail then. And it wasn't all about race and ethnics. So there was a major change in what HUD did with the Obama administration and what they introduced with the language. And they started building up on AFFH in somewhere around 2011. And the language sounds great. And one of the problems with affirmatively furthering fair housing is it sounds so good. And one of the mistakes to me right now is why the Republican candidates for president aren't talking about it. You know, on one hand, it's a little bit politically incorrect, but it affects everybody so personally. And it's going to be taking effect much further. But with regard to the camel, what happens is that essentially every year there's been a longstanding process of how communities have to apply for grants. And before we get off, I'd like to maybe go through a real quick list of those communities in Colorado that are getting grants so listeners will know how they're affected and what they should do. But accepting the grants has always been a rather mechanical process. You apply for it, you say what you're going to use it for, you get the money, and you spend it. And there was a process called analysis of impediments, which was prior to AFFH. And what analysis of impediments was about was essentially, what are the impediments for fair housing, affordable housing? And so they would list various things that could be impediments for fair housing. And so with the introduction of AFFH, it goes away from analysis of impediments, and it gets into now every community is getting instructions beginning now, and that's going to affect their planning. And it's called the AFFH tool, which the localities, the counties, and the cities must essentially use the tool with the data that HUD provides with census data. And so it's part of their plan. They need to start, and they have to do this with community participation. So they need to start filling out this. It's basically called the affirmatively furthering fair housing is a form. And to fill out this form, they have to use the tool, and they have to go in and start identifying, and this is down to tracks within the Census Bureau about race and ethnicity, and then they have to identify wherever there's any kinds of racial discrimination, not discrimination,
disparity.
Where there's basically a difference,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to have differences. So then what the cities have, then they have to come out the cities and the counties have to come out with, okay, what are your goals and what are your objectives? And then you essentially have to match that up and say, okay, what are you going to do about it? And so then what HUD is doing is now pushing the responsibility down on the communities to stand up and say, well, we didn't know we had a problem, but we got a problem now. So, you know, that's what's really different in with regard to the camel coming under the tent, is now the communities, they essentially have to start getting community. And there's, I think I heard Molly say in the beginning something about, you know, with the listeners, how we can correct problems. Correcting what HUD is doing is a very narrow, focused solution.
All right, and let's leave them hanging for that solution to this affirmatively furthering fair housing, because we're going to go to break, so hang with us. We'll be right back.
Running water. We love it when we choose when it runs, not so much when it chooses when to run. Recently, a friend related a water story. He was cooking breakfast on a Saturday morning when his 4-year-old sloshed through the kitchen, leaving wet footprints from his soaked slippers. "What happened?" asked his dad. "The toilet's not working," replied the 4-year-old. They clearly needed the experts at First Choice Plumbing. Kim Munson here. I've worked with First Choice Plumbing for years. They're honest, reliable, and they do terrific work. Whether an emergency, new install, or plumbing repairs, First Choice Plumbing are the pros to call. Serving the South Metro, Northern Douglas County, and surrounding areas, call First Choice Plumbing at 303-841-1448 and tell them the Americhick sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the Heart of the Matter with the Americhicks. Molly Vogt and Kim Munson here. We're getting to the heart of the matter on socialism and a new program that's just kind of sneaking his way in that we're not quite sure if your towns know about quite yet, but it's pretty important because it may take away a lot of your rights. So affirmatively furthering fair housing is a new program that President Obama has passed on his own or set forward under HUD, the Housing and Urban Development Act. And we're talking to Smith Young, who's a retired executive from IBM, University of Florida graduate. Go Gators. I'm from Florida, of course. But he's become very interested in the topic. He traveled to many different communities and saw changes in communities and neighborhoods and wondered what was going on, started researching it, and now is writing and sharing with everybody all the truths that he's finding out on this website, AFFH.net. Check out our Facebook page, Americhicks. I have posted his website there. Check it out for more information. He's got a lot of great examples. So thank you so much, Smith, for holding with us through the break. You know, before we went to break, you were about to tell us the solution to government forcing communities to go out and find out, you know, what the racial and the ethnicity breakup and disparity was in the communities. And I'm sure that eventually you're going to tell us that they're going to start making us do something about that. And maybe that means we've got racial quotas in our neighborhoods. And do people have to move in or out? And what does that do to your choice? But before we get to your solution, if you don't mind, I'd like to go very basic. Let's go back to the basics, because, of course, Kim Munson knows this. She's city council. She's seeing it. But I'm not sure all of our listeners actually know what this means. Do you mind just kind of giving an example of a city that is being affected by this right now? So what happened from the beginning? You know, they applied for a federal grant, and then they were told, yes, you can get the grant, but what you've got to do is go out and do the census. And then what does that mean? What's happening? Can you give us an example?
Sure. And I didn't pay you to ask me that question either. So there's a couple good examples. You know, you've got Westchester, New York, which is an affluent county of 30-some municipalities. It's got a long history, and, you know, there have been all kinds of circuit court decisions about that. But recently, and this is on, I think, the second or third post down on the website, there's Dubuque, Iowa. And this is an article written. Actually, it's not just an article. I can tell that Stanley Kurz did a lot of investigative reporting. And essentially, this is a town in Iowa that's, I think he identified as a few hundred miles from Chicago. And he started off describing how it's not a rich town like Westchester. And so what the city, there's the Section 8 housing. And so the the city had a priority list for Section 8 housing, which they would first give the Section 8 housing to local city residents, and then I believe it was within the state, and then it fell out for everything else. Well, because they take grant money, and I think you can probably see what's coming with regard to a solution, because they take grant money, what that means is that they can't, they, that HUD was able to go to them and say that giving the people in your local community priority for Section 8 housing is racial discrimination.
So they can't give priority to people in their community for low-income housing, even if they are minorities, if they're in their same city?
You can't give priority to people in your local community over people in Chicago.
Even if they're the same race?
It doesn't matter.
You cannot
discriminate, and this reporting is really fairly recent. So essentially then, because Dubuque doesn't have the money to fight it in court, they essentially had to fold. And I think folding for them that now they're engaged in like a 5-year obligation. And so what Stanley Kurtz goes on to describe is the impact this has had on the town with regard to crime and what it's meant to the culture. And some of the comments to his article were from people who've lived there, you know, who were born and raised there, and they're just saying it's not the same city I grew up in. And so stepping back a moment, so the immediate answer to your question is you're giving up local control of your community government. The federal government is regionalizing it and taking it over. So I hope that it gives you a good answer, but I did want to slip in one other point about what AFFH is. It's what, for people that, it's when you go from the application part with HUD being given a grant and you go into the planning phase, HUD is going to start telling you, when you identify your goals, they're going to say, well, what are you doing about transportation? What are you doing about education? What are you doing? And this gets into all the different facets that I think that, Kim, you identified in the beginning of how the government is saying, what are you doing in your communities? Because what they want to do is essentially bring the cities to the suburbs. I mean, that's the effect of this. So with regard to what is AFFH, that's what it is. And there was an interesting article published by Ben Carson, several months back in the Washington Times, where he compared it with busing. So, you know, with regard to what AFFH is, that's what it is. And the example, a good example would be, and go again, I'm going to do a Ted Cruz and say, go to www.affh.net and you'll see the story there that he publishes.
You know, Smith, it's Kim here. I wanted to jump in on this because you make a very important point regarding busing. And we talked to Helen Brawley as well as we talked to Casper Stockham earlier in the previous hour, that socialism sounds good. You know, it sounds noble. Busing sounded noble, that we would you know, integrate neighborhoods. Integration, I believe that actually can happen from a free market standpoint. It may take a little bit of time, but I really think that it can, because I think that in the inherent American idea is that all men are created equal. I mean, my gosh, we went to and spent a lot of time, treasure, bloodshed to determine that particular question. But what we have with Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing is, I think that it's inherently only sees people by the color of their skin. And I had a number of friends that were involved in busing here in Denver when that first occurred. And what it actually did is it decimated communities. It decimated successful Black communities and also white communities, because typically communities may center around a school. And so if, in fact, you know, you see your neighbor's child out you know, ditching school when they should be in school, you would say something about it. If your school is in your community, you can go to the kids' programs at night. But once they started busing, it made it very difficult for parents to be involved in their kids' school lives. And of course, now we're whining about the fact that parents aren't involved in kids' lives. And so whenever you introduce that force, which was that's what happened with busing, and that's where you have noticed the danger with AFFH, the results have never been successful, and they've never been good for people. What do you think?
Well, I concur completely, but I before we get too close to the end here, I did want to be very clear about the solution, and that is that the communities have to basically decline the grant. It's really that simple. And that's very politically difficult for county commissioners and city council members and mayors to support. And if somebody says, okay, this really, you know, it is what it is, what can you do about it? Well, you can call your House, your Senate. There's both a House bill and there's a Senate bill, you know, with Mike Lee. And by the way, Marco Rubio is the only other presidential candidate who's on record as being opposed to it because he's a co-sponsor. That's not to say, you know, that I'm pushing Marco Rubio, but...
And you mentioned Ben Carson also.
Ben Carson's on the record with his article. I haven't heard him discussing it. Mm-hmm. So that I want to cover the solution. And before we end here, I probably should go through the list real quickly and name off the communities.
Let's do that. And hang on, Smith, if you don't mind, I know that we're rushing it. We will go to break in about 4 minutes or so. Do you have time to stay through the break and come back on? And we'll do about another 5 minutes because I want to hear your solutions and I want to hear the communities that are applying for grants. I would love to know, I still have more questions. Can you hang with us through the break?
Absolutely, sure.
All right, well, let's do that right now. Let's just go to break right now, and we'll come back because we're going to continue with Smith. He's got so much information, I think we need to have him on just a little bit longer. Stay with us.
A place to call home. Home is where the heart is. There's no place like home. Karen Levine has been helping individuals buy and sell their homes for the last 25 years, and she's a true pro. Kim Munson here. I've known Karen Levine for over 25 years. I'd like to say we met in kindergarten. However, we're a little older than that. Award-winning Karen Levine appreciates how personal your home is, and she helps people on both the buy and sell sides. She understands the real estate market and has the experience to help you navigate the crazy ups and downs of real estate these days. She's honest, she's trustworthy, and she has your best interests in mind. Give Karen a call at 303-877-7516 or check out her website at karen-levine.com and be sure to tell her the AmeriChicks sent you.
Numbers, numbers, numbers.
Oh, numbers are a big part of everyday life. We're all busy building our businesses, taking care of our families, and trying to fit in a little free time. Kim Munson here. We need a trusted company to help us navigate the numbers. That's why the AmeriChicks work with Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company is a full-service accounting firm that's been helping individuals, businesses, nonprofits, public companies, trusts, and estates navigate the numbers for 25 years. Their website is dpredovich.com. That's dpredovich.com. Or give them a call at 303-791-3000 for a no-charge, no-obligation appointment and tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Welcome back to the Heart of the Matter with the AmeriChicks. Molly Wood and Kim Munson. We're talking to Smith Young about affirmatively furthering fair housing. It's very hard to say. It kind of has a bunch of positive words, but it's not that great, the effect it's going to have on your community. So, Smith, tell us real quick. You said the solution to stopping the force of the government requiring racially diverse quotas on your neighborhood is to decline federal grants. Are there any communities in Colorado that are applying for these grants right now that we need to make sure we get a message to about this?
Sure. I've had to research all the contacts and email addresses, and it's a list of about 160 county commissioners and city council members and mayors, but the list isn't really that long, so I can go through it quickly.
Okay.
That would be Adams County, Arapahoe County, City of Arvada, City of Aurora, City of Boulder, City of Broomfield, City of Centennial, City of Colorado Springs, City of Denver, El Paso County, City of Fort Collins, City of Grand Junction, City of Greeley, Jefferson County, City of Lakewood, that's in Jefferson County, but they're also a grantee, much like Castle Rock. The town of Castle Rock is within Douglas County, but because they've got over 50,000 residents, they were able to be a direct recipient. So, and they actually voted 5-1 against accepting grants. So we've got, continuing here, City of Lakewood, and City of Longmont, City of Loveland, City of Pueblo, City of Thornton, and lastly, City of Westminster.
Okay. And is this list on your website, affh.net?
No, it's not. It's in an Excel spreadsheet I've built.
Okay. Okay.
And,
no worries.
I'm already communicating as much as possible individually, and you know, with the and I, the way to find out, if you go through the website, there's a category at the top on the menu. Give me a moment here, and going to the website, yeah. It's under HUD friendlies or HUD advocacy. And under HUD advocacy, there's targeted counties and municipalities. And essentially, this category takes you to the HUD website so you can see all of the communities in the U.S., all the communities by HUD. So you'll put in that... you'll put in that you're from Colorado, and I usually select CDBG for, and then you'll be able to see this list of municipalities, and you'll also see how much money they're receiving.
Now, Smith, so, did you say Douglas County was on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and within Douglas County, for example, you've got Lone Tree, town of Parker, town of Castle Rock, and the city of Castle Pines. And so indirectly, I think, Kim, like you were saying about Lone Tree, Parker also, unknowingly, this shows you how sly this government can be. Back in the same time frame you were referring to, I believe it was in May.
May and June.
The, and this was before AFFH was in the Federal Register and became their official rule, the town of Parker, which was signed by the mayor and I believe the city attorney or the secretary, and then also by the county of Douglas County, there was a paragraph in there that essentially obligated them to, that they essentially swore that they would support firmly furthering fair housing. So they're obligated already for at least, and I believe this was for a 2-year period. But the solution is, by not taking grant money, what that means is you don't have to use the tool. It's when you're forced to begin using the tool and you start looking at all the data, which isn't free. The cities are going to have to pay.
Right.
I think the estimate was something like maybe on the average of 250 hours per community to fill out this form. So they're going to have to go in and fill out the form and then give HUD all this self-incriminating data. So by not taking the money, you don't use the tool, you don't fill out the form. And, you know, then that's the only way that you can get off the list of being affected by HUD essentially mandating what the community's planning.
You know, and Smith, to that point, we had Cornelia Moroz on, who lives out in Westchester County. And their experience there, though, is even though they had spent all of the time to go through all the data to put together this form, and they went to HUD, and HUD said, no, this isn't what we want, you know, these are not the numbers we want. So HUD was apparently looking for some specific numbers, and so Westchester County, they kept pushing them to go back, and you know, I'm not quite sure. I think that they ended up in court on that, if I remember right. But...
Oh, absolutely. By the way, I've got your AmeriChicks session. I published it back in August 26th of last year on the website.
Okay, great.
Your interview with Cornelia. But a lot's happened since then. What happened was, yes, they went to the court, and it was the Fourth Circuit Court that actually reviewed it, and this was maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and came out with a decision. And that decision effectively said that the Westchester County, that has 30-some communities, you're not guilty of any discrimination. But using the impact statement, they said you've effectively got, I believe it's 3 communities that do not have a plan for how they're going to solve the impact. And so for that reason, and so what the court, the ruling of the decision of the court, and it's currently the situation, is that you, Westchester County, have to work out a deal with HUD on how you're going to solve the issues with these last 3 municipalities. And you know, and so then also Westchester County declined taking the money a year ago. But with the ruling, what happened, I believe it was 2013, I don't want to overload you with too much information. In 2013, what HUD said is that Westchester, you're not going to get the grants, and that's why they were in court. You're not going to get the grant money from 2013, but what's on hold is the money that you're going to get for 2014, which is, of course, several millions of dollars, but you can't get that money until you resolve it with these counties. And that's effectively the current status of the ruling.
Smith, my opinion is that we need to quit taking federal money for any of these kinds of things. This is not the proper role of the federal government, and we need to start to get the spending at the federal level in check. And you know, when they come at us with these grants and all, then there's all kinds of strings attached to that. But Smith, I really want to give a shout out to you and your beautiful wife. I think that many people in America say, can one person make a difference? And from what I've seen that you have done on this particular subject, gaining the knowledge and informing people, taking the time to educate homeowners associations, city councils, county commissioners, you're making a difference. You are one man, your wife is one woman, and you are making a difference. And I just am inspired by you. So thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, too. And one more time, the website is www.affh.net.
Yes, and it's on our Facebook, but I've got another question for you, Smith.
Sure.
So when we were talking to Cornelia Morose in Westchester, New York, she said that they did already do this in her neighborhood. They already brought people in. They bused people in. They built these apartment homes for them to live in, and they put them in really the terrible places. You know, they're right by an airport or a railroad or something like that, which is really noisy and loud and not really desirable. But it had to be in that spot because it was close to, for walking distance to schools and to grocery stores and things like that. And I'm wondering, I have a friend I was telling about the show earlier today, and he said, ask this question, because his parents live in Castle Rock, and they have, you know, many, many acres and horses in this ranch. And this neighborhood is very big, and people have a lot of land out there. You know, they've worked hard all their lives to be able to afford that, and they want to live in the suburbs. They, you know, they want to live out there. They want a ranch, and they want this property, and they pay their taxes, and they're good individuals. So if this starts to happen to their community, and they're forcing this move into their community because they're not racially diverse enough, what would that look like? Would the government be able to take some of their private property to build apartment homes, to build low income housing, because there's not any there right now? And what would that look like? Just first, could they do that? Could they take private property for this purpose?
Well, let me start out with the answer, and this goes back to your interview with Helen Raleigh, is that you're really touching on the difference between the free market and socialism. And by the way, what Helen was describing in her childhood was not socialism, it was communism, and you know, that, which is quite different. But socialism is essentially, like in France and Germany, it's where the government has an investment in industry, but you still have the total control of the government. So we're really talking, you know, so the answer, the way to start off this conversation is the difference between the free market and socialism. So what HUD is a couple mandates from the courts that they can't do. And I was just looking at it this morning, is they really can't tell you what to invest in, and they can't either tell you what to invest in or prevent you from what you can invest in. And that's a mandate from the court. But effectively, indirectly, by affecting your city planning, you know, what that's doing is it's saying, okay, what are you going to do about it? What's your solution? Oh, well, you know, we have to start rearranging, you know, the high density housing is a big deal. Because now the affordable housing, and I've got the second article from the top, I put in a picture. Basically, it's called, you know, a picture says 1,000 words. And it's a picture of, you know, a couple houses. And one of them is from HUD's website. And essentially, it's just showing essentially row homes. And so effectively in a marketplace, what you have is builders go out and decide what they want to build, how they can sell, and make the most money for they can for their homes. But when HUD comes in with all the incentives that they have for tax credits, and all the incentives that they have for what communities need to do, which really affects the lot sizes, the widths of the streets, that they indirectly, this is how they affect mm-hmm. planning. So the planning solution was, well, we're going to start changing our zoning, and we can allow now larger parking lots. Because if you've got small parking lots, you're going to restrict the size of your high-density homes. We're going to allow tall buildings, because if you restrict the buildings to three levels, you're restricting the high-density housing. So the way that the planning works is to come in where the communities say, okay, we're going to do this, and then you work with HUD. HUD wants to have a dialogue with the community, so they can come in and say, well, you need more parking spaces. You need to have higher buildings.
All right. Well, and one last thing, which just I think makes me more nervous than anything. I'm more worried about our national security, I think, than anything else right now. And as I hear about what Syrian refugees are doing in other countries, because they don't believe in women's rights, and they believe that women and children really are there to be slaves, it worries me that we are bringing people into America that we will soon be putting into different neighborhoods. And I'm worried that if this affirmatively furthering fair housing is going to start to require us to really diversify our neighborhoods, then does that mean that those could be the types of people that they're forcing in my neighborhood and I have no say over it?
It's not just forcing. I guess it's a little bit easier for me to say now that I just retired from IBM, but I work a lot with foreign nationals, people from other countries. And, you know, it's not just what's being forced, it's the kind of thinking that comes with it. And we lived for years in Europe, and there's a whole different dialogue you're going to have with people who have grown up with socialism. You know, they kind of expect the government to be taking care of them. You know, that's what we see, that part of it. There, a lot of people that come from the European countries and even especially places, there's a different kind of thinking that we're importing. So it's the thinking as much as it is the imposition of, you know, rules and regulation and what the government. Now these people are going into government and their thinking is, well, we've got to take care of everybody and the government has to do this. And what's a free market? I don't remember learning that in school. You know, those are the kinds of changes that can be affected with the influx of so many people who don't understand or have an appreciation for our culture.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really great point. Smith Young, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Thank you for your good work, taking the time to really unpack this affirmatively furthering fair housing. And you just have a great weekend, a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And everybody out there, go check out the website, www.affh.net, for more information. And that has been posted on the AmeriChicks Facebook page.